He wasn't a rebel with a gun, he was a lover with a wound. In the brutal streets of Trenchtown, Jamaica, a quiet young man emerged with a voice that would seduce the world and soothe a nation on fire. Gregory Isaacs didn't scream revolution, he whispered it, in falsetto. Through addiction, heartbreak, jail time, and a changing industry, his velvet voice never broke. He sang of desire, of regret, of survival, not as a superstar but as a man bleeding melody. From the slow burn of Night Nurse to the spiritual ache of Love Is Overdue, Isaacs redefined reggae, not through politics but through emotion. This is the untold, immersive journey of a man who ruled not with might, but with mood. The legend, the lover, the cool ruler, Gregory Isaacs. And once you hear his voice, you never forget it. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. The Kingston morning was already hot, not just with sunlight, but with tension. Trenchtown in the 1950s wasn't painted with hope, it was carved from struggle. Concrete walls, zinc rooftops, and the echo of ambition battling poverty filled the air like static. And in one of those low-slung homes, on July 15, 1951, Gregory Anthony Isaacs was born into a reality that demanded more than just survival. It demanded style, voice, and rhythm. His mother, Enid Murray, was a strong-willed woman with dreams that stretched beyond the rickety fences of Denham Town. His father, a man less present and eventually absent, left an early silence in Gregory's life, a silence he would learn to fill with melody. Music was never just entertainment in Jamaica. It was rebellion, was a cry, was a confession. And Gregory, even as a boy, was listening. He wasn't loud, he wasn't brash, but Gregory had a presence, that quiet charisma that made people lean in. He had a lisp that somehow made his words softer, more mysterious. He wasn't trying to be Bob Marley. He wasn't trying to be Peter Tosh. He was Gregory, the cool ruler. And before the world ever gave him that crown, the streets of Kingston already knew his potential. As a child, Gregory was drawn to the sonic freedom of the streets. Sound systems blaring ska, rocksteady, and the early beats of what would become reggae music. This was his classroom. The ghetto became his conservatory. He watched elders argue politics over dominoes while Studio One records spun in the background. He saw Rastafarians chant truths the government feared. He learned that music in Jamaica wasn't just performance, it was power. At the age of 13, Gregory dropped out of school. Not out of rebellion but necessity. His mother struggled. Food was sparse. Shoes were a luxury. But hunger sharpened his voice. He began entering local talent contests, and losing. But each loss shaped his stagecraft, each crowd reaction taught him volume control, phrasing, timing. He wasn't just learning how to sing, he was learning how to speak directly to people's pain. In 1968, alongside friend Winston Sinclair, he recorded his first track, Another Heartache, for the small label Success Records. The single didn't bust, but it lit a match in the industry. Producers began whispering about the skinny youth with the silk-like tone and half-lidded eyes who sang like he had already lived a thousand heartbreaks. But Gregory was never going to be satisfied with small beginnings. The 1970s arrived like a cultural thunderstorm in Jamaica. Political warfare, ghetto violence, and the rise of roots reggae were changing the nation's soul. Gregory, meanwhile, began navigating the industry not just as an artist, but as a budding businessman. He co-founded African Museum, his own record label, a radical move in an era where most artists were prey to predatory producers. It was a declaration. Mina just want sing. Me want own D ting too. That voice, silky, melancholic, and sensuous, began to shape a new lane in reggae. While Marley sang of revolution and Tosh thundered about rights, Gregory Isaacs sang about longing, about lust, about regret, about men who cried silently and women who loved dangerously. His themes weren't overtly political, but they were undeniably personal, and therefore just as revolutionary. He gave voice to the emotional complexity of black men in a post-colonial world. He wasn't a rebel with a gun. He was a lover with a wound. His breakthrough came with the album In Person and the single Love Is Overdue. It was a lover's rock anthem before the genre had a name, and it sliced through Kingston like a whispered prophecy. From there, tracks like All I Have Is Love, My Number One, and Night Nurse began forming the romantic backbone of reggae. Not soft, not weak, just honest. As Gregory's star rose, so did his demons. Cocaine crept in. Arrest followed. But even in the chaos, his voice remained untouched, his falsetto still capable of freezing time. He became a paradox, the heartthrob with handcuffs, the crooner with a curse. And yet, Jamaica never turned its back on him. The ghetto boys saw themselves in his stumbles. The women still swooned to his ballads. The elders knew his sound was timeless. By the late 1970s, Gregory Isaacs had carved out a distinct throne. He was the cool ruler, not just because of his song title, but because of how he moved through the fire without raising his voice. Reggae wasn't just about protest anymore. It could be intimate. It could be seductive. It could be painful in the quietest way. And through it all, the industry politics, the drug busts, the betrayals, Gregory kept singing, kept recording, kept performing. Like a man who knew that even if his life burned down around him, his voice would remain eternal. This was just the beginning. Gregory Isaacs wasn't just making music. He was shaping the soul of Jamaican manhood in a time of fire. And Chapter 2 would prove it. The streets of Kingston in the 1970s weren't quiet. They cracked with gunfire, echoed with political chants, and pulsed with the booming bass of rival sound systems. The island was split in two, not just politically but spiritually. Prime Minister Michael Manley had taken Jamaica on a democratic socialist path, aligning with Cuba and angering the CIA-backed opposition. Neighborhoods became war zones. Garrison politics made enemies out of neighbors. Artists were caught in the middle. Some weaponized their music, others found ways to escape the madness. Gregory Isaacs, already rising, made a different choice. He chose romance over revolution. Not because he didn't care, but because he knew something the gunmen didn't. That healing could be sexy. That resistance could be tender. That sometimes the most radical act was to show black men yearning. It was during this time that Gregory's signature sound, Lover's Rock, matured. While the genre's roots were forming in the UK's Caribbean diaspora, it was Gregory who gave it authority and global voice. With every delicate whisper, every honey-soaked falsetto, he made the world lean in. Tracks like Tune In, Soon Forward, and If I Don't Have You weren't just hits, they were soul therapy in a country aching with violence. Studio 17. Channel 1. Dynamic Sounds. These weren't just buildings, they were portals where Gregory sculpted magic. He became a master of restraint, letting his voice slide just behind the beat, wrapping words around bass lines like silk on stone. Producers like Gussie Clark, Sly and Robbie, and King Jammy began crafting rhythms around his emotion, not just his lyrics. And the world, from Brixton to Brooklyn, listened. But while his records climbed charts, his life skidded off balance. By 1978, Gregory's cocaine addiction was no longer a secret. His shows were erratic. His weight fluctuated. His moods darkened. Yet when he stepped into the booth, he became flawless. There was a haunting contradiction about him. He could disappear into paranoia one day, and then record an immaculate vocal take the next. It was as if the studio purified him. As if singing allowed him to escape the prison of his own habits. And then came 1982. The release of the album, Night Nurse. This was not just a career milestone. It was a cultural moment. With its sensual bassline, minimalist production, and Gregory's aching delivery, Night Nurse became an anthem, not just for lovers but for those who felt unseen. The song whispered of loneliness, longing, and sensuality, all delivered with that signature half-smile in his voice. Island vibes soaked in sorrow. It broke through Europe. It topped reggae charts. It introduced Gregory to a mainstream audience while still sounding underground. It was reggae, but cinematic. Lover's Rock, but with teeth. He performed on Top of the Pops in the UK. Toured through Africa, Europe, and North America. His fan base expanded, from hardened rude boys to suburban soul seekers. Gregory wasn't just Jamaica's crooner anymore. He was global. But fame is a double-edged sword, and Gregory's blade was sharp. With more money came more drugs. With more love came more betrayal. With more touring came more separation from his children, his home, his peace. Still, the man never stopped recording. Gregory Isaacs would put out over 50 albums in his lifetime, an unthinkable catalog. Some were rushed. Some were masterpieces. All carried his unmistakable DNA, heartbreak, vulnerability, quiet defiance. Through his lyrics, he told the story of a man constantly searching for loyalty, for redemption, for something pure in a world that wasn't. His music became a form of cultural resistance, not in shouts but in sighs. Not in fire but in smoke. Gregory wasn't just fighting addiction. He was fighting the expectation of failure. He was a black man from the Kingston ghetto who had made it, and the world was just waiting for him to fall. But Gregory made falling look like flying. He turned jail time into reflection. He turned heartbreak into chart toppers. He turned every bad man story into a bedroom confession. His love songs weren't just about women. They were about escape, about power, about preserving dignity in a world built to strip it away. Each verse was a chapter in the history of the Caribbean, where softness was strength and melody was memory. As the 1980s faded into the 1990s, Gregory Isaacs remained a king. But the kingdom was changing. Dancehall was rising. Digital rhythms were taking over. New voices, Buju, Capleton, Beanie, were taking the mic. And still, Gregory stood, older now, slower, but undeniably royal. Not because of money. Not because of hits. But because his voice still moved people. Still stopped time. He had become more than a man. He was a sound. A spirit. A reminder that the most powerful revolutions begin in the heart. Chapter 3 would begin in a new era. One where Gregory's battle wasn't just with drugs, but with the very industry he helped build. The 1990s arrived like a storm of neon and noise. Dancehall was the new king in town, faster, rougher, digitized. The roots of reggae had been electrified, and a younger, brasher generation had taken the torch. Shabba Ranks, Super Cat, Ninja Man, Buju Banton, they weren't singing about heartbreak in satin shirts. They were commanding crowds with raw swagger and bass-heavy bravado. And yet, Gregory Isaacs, the cool ruler himself, remained. Older. Weathered. But still standing. Still lacing his voice with velvet. Still carrying the flag of lover's rock in a world that was becoming more about rhythm than romance. But behind the scenes, the cracks were widening. Gregory had always been honest about his addiction. But by the early 90s, the cocaine wasn't just recreational, it was reality. His once sharp suits were replaced with crumpled shirts. His punctuality, already shaky, became mythical. And some nights, the microphone couldn't disguise his demons. Yet somehow, he never lost his magic. His voice still curled around syllables like smoke through shutters. Even when the notes trembled, the soul remained raw, real, devastating. In 1991, a series of drug-related arrests made headlines. The press, quick to bury their own heroes, began painting Gregory as a has-been, a cautionary tale. Promoters grew hesitant. Some fans turned judgmental. But others, the real ones, knew that greatness doesn't vanish in a scandal. It just retreats, recoils, reloads, and reload he did. Gregory never stopped recording, never stopped reinventing. He shifted from mainstream labels to independent presses, regaining control. He released album after album, some forgettable, some unforgettable. His 1994 record, Private Beach Party, reminded listeners why they fell in love in the first place. It was smooth, poetic, and aching, a perfect blend of island vibes and urban melancholy. Critics hailed it as a comeback. But Gregory wasn't trying to return. He had never left. He just moved in the shadows. Even as the industry evolved, Gregory retained his cultural power. He was invited to perform at major festivals, Reggae Sunsplash, Rototom Sunsplash, and Notting Hill Carnival. Everywhere he went, the old magic returned. Crowds sang every word. Women wept. Men closed their eyes and remembered past loves. It was more than nostalgia. It was recognition. Gregory Isaacs had become a living archive, a bridge between reggae's romantic roots and its gritty evolution. But the cost of survival was steep. Years of addiction had carved deep into his body. His once robust frame had withered. His teeth, stained and missing, became the subject of cruel jokes. His finances crumbled under the weight of bad contracts and expensive habits. And yet, he walked with royalty. He never begged. He never complained. He simply kept singing. Because for Gregory, the music wasn't just a career, it was medicine. A way to silence the chaos. A ritual. A confession booth. By the late 2000s, a new generation of artists, many born after his heyday, began name-dropping him in interviews. Romaine Virgo, Terrace Riley, Chronix, and others cited Gregory as an influence. The lover's rock DNA pulsed in their sound. His legacy had not faded, it had mutated, multiplied, magnified. He became a quiet elder statesman. Not flashy. Not preachy. Just present. In 2008, Gregory collaborated with Barris Hammond on several live shows, two titans of romantic reggae sharing one stage, exchanging smiles, trading verses, embodying decades of sonic mastery. For those in attendance, it was more than a concert. It was a ceremony. But time, even for the most immortal voices, is undefeated. In 2010, Gregory was diagnosed with lung cancer. It was a quiet announcement. No tabloid frenzy. no dramatic farewell tour. Just a whisper in the wind, the kind of exit only Gregory Isaacs would choose. He didn't want pity. He didn't want a eulogy. He wanted to keep recording. And that he did. Until the very end, he laid tracks. His final sessions were filled with the same tenderness, the same ache. There was something ghostly about those late recordings, as if he already knew he was singing from the other side. On October 25, 2010, the world lost Gregory Isaacs. But reggae didn't. Because Gregory wasn't just a man. He was a frequency. A tone. A sigh. A vibration in the bloodstream of island culture. He wasn't perfect. But he was real. He showed us that even kings stumble, but their crowns are carved in legacy. The cool ruler had ruled not with an iron fist, but with an open heart. And long after his body faded, his voice still warms beds, breaks hearts, and softens wounds. Chapter 4 would explore that voice, not as a memory but as a living spirit. Still playing. Still healing. Still seducing history itself. It begins quietly. A needle drops. A bassline breathes. Then that voice, silky, weary, dangerous, divine. Gregory Isaacs, gone from this world, but somehow still whispering in the ears of lovers, rebels, and wanderers across the globe. In death, Gregory became myth, but not the kind of myth sculpted by PR campaigns or digital nostalgia. No, Gregory became the kind of myth that only truth can forge, flawed, raw, but unforgettable. His legacy didn't rest in monuments or platinum plaques. It lived, and still lives, in sound systems, in vinyl crates, in late-night playlists passed between generations like family recipes. His voice had become an heirloom. Lovers rock, the genre he helped elevate, evolved in the diaspora long before Jamaica embraced it fully. In London, Birmingham, and Brixton, his songs were the backdrop of Caribbean immigrant dreams, bedroom anthems that softened the reality of cold climates and hostile streets. Gregory was the soundtrack to assimilation and resistance. He gave voice to black tenderness in an era that rarely allowed it. Even as digital streaming took over the music industry, Gregory's analog soul held firm. On Spotify, his classic Night Nurse hit millions of plays. On YouTube, grainy concert footage earned comments from fans half his age. In Jamaica, taxis still echoed his ballads through cracked speakers, and old men still sat on verandas quoting lines from Love is Overdue, like scripture. And yet, this chapter is not just about memory. It is about transmission, how Gregory's influence lives not as a relic, but as a cultural current flowing through today's Caribbean identity. Artists like Terrace Riley, Protoge, and Romaine Virgo often speak of Gregory not just as a singer, but as an archetype. His confidence. His phrasing. His balance of masculinity and vulnerability. Gregory was proof that a man could be smooth without being soft, emotional without being weak. In the history of the Caribbean, his voice stands alongside Marley's Fist and Tasha's Fire as a different kind of resistance. The resistance of intimacy. Culturally, his influence seeps into fashion too. The open silk shirts. The subtle gold chains. The loverman aesthetic that rejected the ragged, militant image of Rastafari without ever disrespecting it. He wasn't dreadlocks and eye tall stew. He was pressed slacks and quiet danger. He was cool in the chaos, and the Caribbean needed that balance. More than a decade after his passing, Gregory Isaacs has become a fixture in black musical history, crossing genres and borders. In Afrobeats, you hear echoes of his phrasing, smooth, spaced, effortless. In UK grime, there are samples of his hooks. In trap soul, you feel his DNA, the heartbreak, the vulnerability masked by cool. Academic institutions now include his work in Caribbean studies syllabi. Scholars analyze his lyricism as emotional ethnography, documenting the internal life of the Jamaican man in post-colonial flux. His songs weren't just about women. They were about identity, regret, aspiration, and longing. And what of his children? Gregory had several, and many entered music in his shadow. His son, Kevin Isaacs, has carried the torch, performing his father's classics while cultivating his own style. But the Isaacs legacy isn't about duplication. It's about preservation through evolution. Because Gregory didn't want to be worshipped. He wanted to be remembered honestly. For the missed shows and the magic. For the genius and the self-destruction. For the way his voice could both wound and heal in a single verse. Today, murals of Gregory Isaacs can be found in cities he never visited. Fans still wear shirts bearing his image, half smiling, half faded. But the real tribute is in the music. In that one moment at 3 a.m. when someone presses play on Stranger in Town, or Number One, and feels like someone finally understands them. That is immortality. That is legacy. and in the Caribbean, where music is memory and rhythm is rebellion, Gregory Isaacs remains a living presence. He doesn't haunt stages. He doesn't hover in the past. He sings on, eternal, irreplaceable. A cool ruler who proved that vulnerability was not a weakness, but a weapon. It is said that true legends never die. They echo, in speakers, in silence, in the collective heartbeat of a people who refuse to forget. Gregory Isaacs didn't just leave behind a catalog. He left behind a mirror held up to a generation of lovers, fighters, addicts, survivors, and dreamers. He embodied contradiction, both saint and sinner, fragile and fearless. His voice, even now, slides through the walls of apartments and roadside bars like a ghost with perfect timing. But what does it truly mean to live on? For Gregory Isaacs, immortality came not from awards, though he had them, or even from his chart success. It came from the emotional residue his music left behind. His songs were time machines, memory traps. They turned heartbreak into anthem, guilt into groove, lust into legend. He didn't ask for permission. He just sang. And now, over a decade after his death, his impact has become more visible, not less. Across the globe, reggae tribute festivals still include his name at the top of the bill. His music remains a pillar of reggae music, especially in the lovers rock subgenre, which continues to influence genres from Afrobeats to R&B to neo-soul. In Jamaica, he is one of the few whose name still sparks genuine reverence, even among Gen Z youths raised on trap, TikTok, and digital rhythms. But this is more than nostalgia. This is about cultural memory. About the way Gregory's music kept a certain emotional honesty alive in the Caribbean psyche, especially in black men for whom softness had long been criminalized. His songs were sermons for the quietly broken. Ballads for men who couldn't cry but needed to. Anthems for women who craved emotional depth in a world full of bravado. Gregory Isaacs was a poet of longing, and that poetry still resonates across oceans. From Kingston to Kampala. From Trenchtown to Toronto. From sound clashes to Spotify playlists. And it's not just his music that carries on, it's the values embedded in it. Emotional authenticity, in a genre often dominated by bravado, Gregory brought balance. He made it acceptable to hurt, to yearn, to admit weakness. Cultural sophistication, his image, polished, dapper, romantic, challenged stereotypes of the Jamaican man. He represented a different kind of power, quiet power. Ownership and independence. Founding African Museum Records was not just a business decision. It was a political act. It was about black control of black art, a battle still being fought today. Endurance and struggle. Despite his addiction and controversies, Gregory never stopped creating. His resilience became part of his legend. And now, as scholars and critics reevaluate Caribbean music within global music history, Gregory Isaacs is increasingly seen as a cornerstone figure, not just a hitmaker but a visionary of emotional resistance. His life may not have followed the arc of perfection, but that's why it matters. He was real. And because he was real, his voice carries weight, in love, in sorrow, in celebration, in mourning. His death in 2010 didn't end his story. It simply turned the volume down, for a moment. Because every time someone presses play on Night Nurse, or Cool Down the Pace, or Number One, Gregory Isaacs lives again. In the dance hall. In the bedroom. In the back of a cab cutting through Kingston rain. In the soul of the Caribbean diaspora, scattered across the globe but always reaching home through sound. The cool ruler lives on. Not just in vinyl. Not just in documentaries. But in the unspoken language of longing that his music taught us to speak fluently. His is the voice you never forget. The voice you return to. The voice that tells you it's okay to feel everything, and still walk like royalty. This is the true story of Gregory Isaacs. The man who taught the world that reggae could be seductive. That love could be radical. And that cool was a form of survival. He didn't just shape a genre. He shaped how we feel. And that is forever.